Hello. How's everybody doing? Good. Good. Two more sessions, right? This one and one more. One next week. Numbers are getting, they're getting a little bit smaller. It's getting a little bit more condensed. We'll see how many people we get next week, right? Just before Christmas. So there'll be people. Is somebody here for the first time? All right. Good. Well, welcome. We'll have some first-time people next week too on the last session too, so that's fine. Have those of you that have, your first time, have you been involved in any meditation at all, or no? How about you? Not really. Did you say yours?
Kind of like formal. I tried it on my own.
Okay, that's fine. Yeah, that's good. That's good. So we'll kind of do a little bit of review here, and then do some meditations, and we'll have some discussion. We'll kind of do a couple different things here this evening too. So let's start out with everybody. Have your cell phones off, if you will, please, or on vibrate or whatever they might be. And then we'll just do a few minutes of meditation. So to review. If you're sitting in a chair, feet flat on the ground as much as possible, and your back usually away from the backrest. If you're on a cushion on a floor, and you can, again, feel free to go from the floor to the chair and back and forth. It's fine. It doesn't make a difference. It's not disruptive. If you're on the floor on a cushion, it's usually best to kind of sit towards the front of it a little bit, and that lets your knees hang down a little bit. And then it opens up your hips and allows you to kind of keep your back straight. So, and we do want our back straight like a stack of coins as much as possible. Your hands comfortable either on resting on your knees. Traditional pose would be right hand in the left with the thumbs touching, but whatever is comfortable is fine. It's really not that big of a deal. Shoulders relaxed, the top of your head like it's on a string that pulls up the crown of your head, and then it allows your chin to kind of drop forward a little bit. Your tongue at the roof of your mouth behind your front teeth, and your eyes either closed or you can leave them slightly open. If you leave them open, sometimes it's a good idea to focus on a spot in front of you, and then it holds your attention. And then we're going to do a 9-round breathing to start out with. Some of you may have we've done this before. Some of you may be doing that at home. It's a nice one if you need to kind of get your mind settled. So we'll start out. We'll plug up our left nostril and breathe in through the right, and then exhale through the left, in through the right, out through the left. And then we're going to switch and plug up the right nostril and do 3 times in, out through the opposite, and 3 times in and out through both nostrils. And as you do that, kind of visualize, as you inhale, visualize kind of clear, pure light going in. And you can create these. You want these visualizations to be, vivid as much as possible. And picture that light going down into your lungs, and then maybe traveling throughout your body. And then as you exhale, imagine all the negativities, even today or all week or whatever, any negativity they have kind of coming out of your body like soot and leaving, and it's kind of dissipating into the atmosphere. And then after we do the 9-round breathing, we'll just do some focused breathing, and you can choose whatever you want. If you want to just count your breaths, that's fine. If you want to just focus on your breath without counting, that's fine. If you want to try to do the big sky or the ocean meditation where your mind becomes either the sky or vast like the ocean, that's fine too. And then thoughts arise. If you're doing a counting meditation, when a thought comes into your head, when a thought comes into your head, not if one does, but when it does, you let it go. And just kind of let it float away. Same if you're seeing your mind like an ocean. If you see a thought, just like a fish, just let it swim away. Or a cloud in the sky, just kind of let it go. I had somebody tell me in the last class I taught last year, that they picture it like if you have an iPhone and you're closing apps, you flick them off. He says he does like that with his thought. I thought that was visualization, but whatever. So, okay, so we'll start out with 9-round breathing, and then we'll just do your own thing for a few minutes. So we'll start out plugging the left. And exhale by plugging the right. your mind has wandered, bring it back to the breath. Okay, I wandered way off. That's why I made that little announcement to bring myself back. It's amazing. Sometimes, you know, you can kind of hold it for a while and catch yourself when you get just a little bit off, and sometimes you're like way lost, and it's like, ooh, where am I at here? How'd everybody's week go? Did people get a chance to practice a little bit every day? Try to. Varying degrees of success. Are you having any problems, obstacles, questions, things that are unclear, things that are maybe really clear? Anybody? Anybody? Your cat? Your cat annoy you? Yeah. That happens. I have the same problem too. How do you all deal with that?
She bit me in the face.
Oh, she. My cat doesn't bite.
She's mad I wasn't paying attention to her.
Oh yeah.
She bit me in the chin.
So oh no.
Put her outside.
Okay.
Helps for a little while, but then she cries by the door.
So. Yeah, that's a challenge, you know. My cat's not quite as aggressive. I can ignore her and she'll just go away, but if they're biting on you, that's a different thing. Chris, are you going to say something?
Well, first, I don't think Shanti Deva said anything about flesh-eating cats.
Yeah, that's right. You're probably right.
Yeah, but I just wanted to say that 9-round breathing, I am always amazed about how good that is about, like, just clearing my mind out totally. It just proves to me that you can only think about one thing at a time.
Yeah.
And just a little bit of concentration on that visualization, and it's like reformat and reinstall your brain.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
Thank you. I mean, that's true. You know, it's funny because I don't particularly care for that meditation, but when I do it, I like it. So I don't do it often enough on my own. I probably should do it more because I don't gravitate towards it, but it really does make a difference, you know.
Yeah, I didn't like it at first either. I thought it was kind of silly, but
yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, thank you. Anybody else? Cats breathing? Yes. we'll get the microphone. I guess we could get a few of them circulating around or something.
I found that someone suggested guided meditations, and I found that those really helped with keeping up with the practice and getting motivated to start and actually stay focused during the meditation.
So what do you have? Do you have like a CD or an MP3 or a recording of a guided meditation or something?
So I downloaded an app, and then there is also UCLA has some free guided ones online. Just kind of Googled some too, but I have an app that has.
Oh yeah, there's probably a ton of them. Is there anything in particular that you like, or do you just do a variety of things?
I actually just choose based on what I'm feeling, and so there was one that was like calmness, or there's even present walking.
Okay.
So there's all different kinds. Just kind of depends on what I feel like I need to work on.
Good. And that gives you a set amount of time, right? Because you're probably not going to stop in the middle. You're going to take the whole thing, but it forces you to do something. So that's good. They have some guided meditations that are silent, which is kind of weird. You know, they have a bell that goes off every 10 or 15 minutes, however you want to set. It's good to mix things up if you can. I think it's a good idea that you've gotten something that'll kind of get you motivated to do something. And at some point, you might want to, you know, if you can get back to doing maybe a guided meditation with a brief period in the middle with some just focus on your breathing. Because if you can build up that focus, that'll serve you very well, you know, down the road. Thank you. Any other comments? Somebody else had something they were going to say, and maybe they retracted it.
Well, I've been doing some guided meditation as she is.
Okay.
I'm trying to start with some 9-round breathing, and I'll do the 5 minutes of breathing.
Okay.
Just sort of
does a 9-round help?
Oh, yeah, it really helps.
Yeah, it kind of gets you locked in there, doesn't it?
Right.
Yeah, that's good. All right. So, are you able to set up specific times and locations, or is it still kind of, you're still testing things out? Testing things out, varying with different times. You probably start out trying to get it in when you can. That's, I think, probably the more common route. And over a period of time, you know, you'll start to develop some habits. You might start looking forward to that time. It's kind of like when you first start going to the gym, right? It takes a lot of effort. And then you start looking forward to that little chunk of time, 10, 20 minutes, whatever you set aside. And then you'll get a little bit more structured in that. So you'll have a time when you prefer to do it. You know, and that's really when it starts to, I think it starts moving a little quicker, because you'll look forward to that space, you know, be it morning or whatever time you pick, and utilize that. Does anybody have a specific spot that they go to meditate? They pick the same spot all the time? Renee, you do? So you have a place designated, right? Do you have a zafu there or a chair there or something, or is it just pulling up at the kitchen table at a certain time? This is where I'm going to do my thing. You don't have to reveal a whole lot of it.
I sit on my couch.
Okay.
I've always done that.
Good.
I have a little bit of back support, but I don't have back support from the part of my back up.
Okay.
My head is not like leaning against anything.
Yeah. All right. Other people have a specific area you set up?
I set it in my office.
Well, that's fine. At your desk?
On the floor across from my desk.
Okay, good.
And it's got a big panel of gray that I can just look at.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, yeah. So yeah, if you have a designated space to that, sometimes is helpful in getting you into kind of a habit. And then I failed to do it tonight to set a motivation, but you should do that, you know. When you go to sit, you know, say, you know, tell yourself, this is what I'm going to do. This is what that space is for. It's okay to just be mindful at some random times throughout the day, ideally throughout the day, right? But when you do the formal meditation, you want to kind of, you know, really focus yourself on, I'm going to go and do this for X amount of time, and then you do it. So you kind of calm your mind down when you sit down. You know, you set your motivation, you know, why you're going to do that. Sometimes in this practice, in a Buddhist setting, you know, it'll be for, you know, specific purpose, for the benefit of all sentient beings, is for the benefit of everybody around. You know, you can even say for the benefit of my friends and family. That's a real good motivation to do it, you know. And then do it for yourself. You know, if you want to start out small and just kind of expand the circle. And then do your motivation and then do your meditation. And then the other thing that's good to do is at the end is dedicate that to either, you know, friend, family, or other people, or whatever you want to dedicate it to. It kind of seals it, right? It's like, what did they, you know, it's like putting bookends on it. It's like hitting the save button on your document before you walk away. It guarantees that it's locked in there, you know? So if you do that little motivation at the beginning and the dedication at the end, it really will begin to kind of enrich your meditation practice. And yeah, the motivation too, it's like, you know, when you make the decision you're going to do something, it kind of helps you move in that direction, if that makes sense. So everything we do, you know, if we decide we're going to do something, we have to set the decision that we're going to do something. So again, that kind of gets your meditation session off to a good start. Yeah. Other thoughts or problems we're running into beside cats and whatnot? Yeah.
Don't I think it's relevant that how do I keep arrogance out of the thought process about, well, I know this is what you do.
He's asking how, I'll repeat it if that helps. How do you keep arrogance out of the meditation? So you're saying that when you sit, you say you know this already?
It's not necessarily about the meditation itself, just you ask the just general question.
Okay.
Okay, I know this already, so how do I actually be present and just be here and listen to what you're talking about?
Without, all right. Well, yeah, so you may know this. In fact, we all know this on some level. You know, this isn't anything that we haven't all experienced on some degree, I would assume. Maybe think about the fact that you're hearing it from a different angle. You know, it's stuff that we know, but we're listening or we're hearing it from a different direction, perhaps, you know. In general. Okay. Yeah. That's hard to get that beginner's mind again sometimes. We kind of bump up into this, you know, this is something that we know already. And then how do we kind of get back to square one? The cookie thief.
Right. It's about
humility. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, she had a great poem. I don't have it memorized. I don't know if you do or not.
I have it on my phone.
Okay. I can't read it without crying. Oddly enough. Yeah, I read that poem so many times. When we do that, we do this poem in for training, and every time it's a toss-up between my wife and I. We both are going to start getting all worked up about it. It's a crazy thing. I think we've done it, and we've got that sensation of humility for that poem so ingrained that it just kind of wells up and we can't get through the thing. So if you want to read it, you're welcome to. But anyway, it's a poem. Hunt it up, The Cookie Thief. You'll be able to find it online. But it's about arrogance and humility. And it does a pretty good job of explaining, demonstrating the fact that sometimes we think we know the way things are, only to find out that we're totally surprised, you know. Like I knew that lady was still in that shopping cart, right? And I don't know. You know, we've all encountered things like that before, where we make assumptions about something, we know the way they are, and only to find out that we're absolutely wrong. It's hard sometimes opening our minds to that, going in. But it's really something that you have to kind of work with. Humility is a hard one. In fact, when they look at all of the different types of attachments in Buddhism, there's a lot of discussion on attachments. We're attached to all sorts of things. Our own reputation and our own self-image is the hardest one to let go of. You know, physical attachment's a whole lot easier than letting go of our reputation and what we think we know about ourselves. That's probably the greatest attachment we have and the hardest one to let go of, but the cookie thief. Other comments? We'll have some more discussion about this. We'll be doing some breakout and let you all talk about some of the things that you've learned, the benefits throughout. But just, has anybody begun to see the subtle change in the way they perceive things, or maybe not yet? A little bit? How does it feel? I mean, does it feel like you're letting go of things? Are you able to let go of some things a little bit? Think?
And also the space between stimulus and response.
Okay. The space between stimulus and response. Yeah. Yeah.
But I'm also able to let go of things that feel hurtful.
Okay.
You know, and they don't bother me.
They don't bother you. The hurtful things don't bother you like they used to. Yeah, the whole point is creating that space, right, so that we don't necessarily just have this knee-jerk reaction. We don't react to things so much, but we can take the time to respond to things rather than react to them, you know. So and once you realize that you have that power, then that becomes pretty big, you know, because then we can decide that we're going to let go of things. You know, I don't have to allow that to affect me if I so choose. It's hard sometimes, you know, and if we start out small with easy things, simple things, and certainly it's a lot easier to work with. If patience is a good one. If we have trouble with anger or irritation, you know, we have to find things that irritate us in order to practice that. It's easy. I know it sounds kind of crazy. It's easy to be sitting here. This is the easy part, right? Sitting on the pillow and doing this. But when we're out in the real world, that's where the real practice takes place. So, you know, we have to be able to allow ourselves to be exposed to things that may irritate us a little bit or make us angry or create a sense of arrogance even. You know, there's different things that you can practice with. If we want to work on humility, you know, find situations where arrogance will arise and expose yourself to those things and then just kind of work with that a little bit and try to let go of it, you know. So that's really what this is all about, is in understanding that we have that space to be able to play with that a little bit. And sometimes I know when when I think about that, I sometimes am afraid that, well, people are going to start thinking I'm weird because I'm, you know, I'm doing something different. But it can be pretty subtle. You know, you don't have to, you know, you don't have to announce, all right, I'm going to practice my listening skills or my patience or whatever it is with you. You just kind of do it, you know, and then reevaluate and see, how did that work? How did that make me feel? And how did that make the other person feel? You know, so you have permission to play around with that a little bit. And a lot of times we don't realize we have that permission, you know. We think we'll be kind of out of character and it's going to mess everybody else up. But that's not necessarily the case, you know. And as you start to practice a little bit more and more off the cushion, and you see that things are working out better and better and better, it just kind of, it allows you to kind of expand that space a little bit. This was a couple years ago, I remember, and this is about this time of year, during the holidays, right, people's, you know, we got to deal with family. We got to deal with stuff that we kind of look forward to, but also kind of a lot of times is can be pretty nerve-wracking. And there was somebody in one of the classes, and she was visiting family over Thanksgiving, and she would notoriously, her sister, they'd always get in some sort of argument or fight or whatever it was. And she decided to just use this as an opportunity to practice not getting into a fight. See how that worked? And she said it really threw her sister off. It's like, well, you know, aren't you going to spar with me? And she just, you know, no, I'm going to enjoy it. And it just changed everything. And everybody was happier. She said, but I just kind of did it on a dare, you know. Thought, well, I can do this. And it worked out for the better. So, you know, it really does kind of expand a little bit if you practice with it a little. So. Any other comments or thoughts? Yes, please.
This week the change.
This week the change.
Last week when we were thinking about change and had a meditation about everything is changing, that really helped me this week to think of things as temporary. So even the worst day is just temporary. So the change meditation really helped. Just in a lot of ways I was not expecting.
Oh, good, good. Yeah, we think that these things are kind of, you know, whatever we're faced with right now is what we think is permanent. But if you allow your mind to kind of expand. Now, on the downside, the good stuff's going to go away too. And that's, you know, but that's okay to think about, right? That's, you should be prepared for that as well. So, good, good. We're going to do a different meditation here today. And we'll go ahead and do that now, actually. So I'm going to do a little kind of a guided meditation. And it's a visualization. Can you see this table? Should I move it over here a little bit? Now, can everybody see that? You don't have to keep, you don't have to keep your eyes on that, but... Bottle of water. Can you all see a bottle of water? Pure water. Okay. All right. So this is going to be a kind of an analytical meditation, but we'll see what kind of emotions we can kind of conjure up as we do this. So I want you all to get in your 7-point position, feet, butt, back, shoulders, hands, top of your head, your tongue and your eyes. And just think about that water. You can stare at it for a little bit if you want to, but I want you to kind of think about that water. So even if you close your eyes, kind of keep that murky water in your mind. And we'll take a few breaths in and out. Now I want you to try to imagine this, which is with as much vividness, I guess, as possible. And imagine that you live in a country in Africa. In a small village, there's a lot of unrest in the country, perhaps. And it's early morning, and you have to get up with your family or somebody else in your family, other people in the village, usually women. And you're going to have to go get water. That's your job. And you carry buckets and jugs. You walk for miles. And it's starting to get hot. And you end up at this area that you call a well, which is really just a big mud hole. And there's animals around drinking and wading through the water. And you climb down and you start scooping out this water. The water's warm, I know. And there's insects. And it's pretty filthy looking. And other members of your village have been sick from the water. But that's your water. And then you start carrying these jugs of water back, the miles that you've hiked in the heat, the sun beating down. Back to your village. That process has taken you a good part of the day. And your whole family has maybe 5 or 10 gallons of water, whatever you're able to carry. And that's the water for the day. And you do that day in and day out, regardless of the weather. There's no opportunity for education at the school because you spend all day getting water. And you're perfectly happy with that filth that you call water. Now you're back here in Raleigh, and here we are. We can walk over to a sink and flip a switch or a valve, get cold water, hot water. Most of us won't drink that, or push the button on the box on the wall and get clear, cool, sanitary water. Most of us don't drink that. Many of us have bottled water next to us, myself included. We don't think about the people that spend all day getting that muddy water. Nor do we think how fortunate we are. They have clean water available all the time. The water we flush our toilets with is cleaner than what many people in the world drink. Were you able to follow along with that? What kind of emotions did that conjure up?
Gratitude.
Anything else? Contentment, sometimes we use it for that. Gratitude's a big one, yes.
Guilt.
Yeah, guilt's a weird one. Well, I'm going to say make that statement in relation to Buddhism. Tibetans don't have any word for guilt. They struggle with that. Geshe just can't figure out what guilt is. You know, there's regret, but he can't understand guilt. So, but I'm glad you said that. Guilt in relation to what we have versus what other people don't. Yeah. It's amazing. We don't realize what we have sometimes. You know, we always kind of compare ourselves upward, like, what does that person have that I want? But we don't compare ourselves to the rest of the world, you know, and realize how much stuff we have. And it doesn't make any difference, you know, that's the thing. And Geshe will talk about that a lot, that, you know, we've got more stuff in our pet food aisle at the grocery store than they have in their entire grocery store, you know. The quantity. I've got 7 food lines within probably 5 miles of my house, you know. The quantity of what we have, and yet, we've got the depression and the anxiety and all those kind of problems, you know. In countries where they drink water like this, I've seen people with big smiles on their face. This is great, you know. And yet, this stuff doesn't matter. It doesn't matter to us, right? The having more doesn't make things any better. That should be a big lesson right there, you know, because we don't think about what we have. Yes, ma'am.
Doing it. And
yeah.
At that point, it was almost like a release. Like, oh, okay. Okay, well, at least I'm happy doing it. And then I kind of started thinking about how, you know, it's kind of like if you don't know that there's something better, then, you know, it doesn't really affect you negatively. But when you know something's better, you're like, oh, I want that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Once you have it, right?
Yeah.
Once you know it's out there. But we don't often look and realize how much better we have it than so much of the rest of the world, so many folks in the rest of the world, you know. It's just not something we take the time to think about. Any other thoughts on that? So the idea is to find something that creates a strong emotion like that, and then meditate on that. And if you use that in conjunction with the focus meditations, the idea is to hold that sense of gratitude, or you want to hold positive emotions. You don't want to hold on to something negative. Those you're flicking off the screen, right? But you want to find a reason to sit with something like compassion or gratitude or forgiveness or something that you can sit with and then hold that as long as possible and make that as strong as possible. And that's where the focus meditations come in, because it helps build that focus that you're able to do that for a length of time. Then you start crying when you read The Cookie Thief. You read it enough times, so like, oh no. It's embarrassing. What I want you to do, we're going to break up into groups of two or three, and just spend some time talking about, some of the things that you've learned maybe over the last 4 weeks, some of the things that you've gained from practicing over the last 4 weeks. Maybe some things that have gotten worse, since you've started doing this, because things will surface that you thought, oh, I didn't think that was going to come up. And things kind of pop back up again. So, and then if we're so inclined, we'll talk about some of that when you're finished discussing it with somebody near you. Okay. Did everybody get a chance to discuss those things and other things, maybe? I don't know. Anybody have anything that they wanted to share from that discussion with somebody else? Are willing to share? Benefits? Yes, sir.
Well, for me,
here comes Chris, the mic. The mic. There is somebody watching this at home and recording.
For me, I didn't start meditating until I had a crisis.
Okay.
I wonder, what brings people to this, if you're not in a crisis? For me, it was like, I'm looking for an answer. I need help. I need a new way of looking at things. And I don't know, maybe people do it out of curiosity, but it's pretty darn compelling when you're in a crisis, and so I'm grateful for it.
Yeah.
It really made a difference for me.
Okay. So he came to this during a crisis. Did you don't have to admit that he came to this during a crisis, but did other people the same way? Or, how do people come into this or introduce to it? Yeah, Renee? Well, oh, wait, Chris has got to get the mic. Oh, we're going to get dueling microphones going here.
I've been meditating for a long time before I came here, and when I first started meditating, there was something inside of me, and I couldn't quite place it, and didn't know what it was. And I met somebody who was very into meditation. I'm like, you have it. What is it? What is it? What are you doing? And it was a person who meditated every day, And I was like, that's it. That's it. That's what I've been looking for. And it was more, it was something that was inside me that hadn't had an opportunity to express itself because I hadn't been exposed to it in an outer way yet.
Mm. Okay. So it wasn't a crisis. They just had what it was you were looking for. Externally, they radiated what it was you were looking for.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
But when I'm in a crisis place in life, which happens from time to time, I'm very grateful that I have this to fall back on.
Yeah. Yeah. Anybody else? How they came to this? Want to share? Yes, sir.
Yeah, I've had a series of crises throughout my life. I think it's just got me kind of like searching more and more.
I got a series of crises.
In different places. Like have another crisis and I'm not doing things right, like my philosophy is not correct,
okay,
not complete or something like that. So yeah, I've been searching for a long time and all over the place.
And you've come to this.
Yeah, I'm here now.
Yeah, okay. That's good then. It's funny because we do prison work, and it's amazing how many folks come to, you know, they call us Dharma, right? Come to the Dharma, this understanding or teaching. That's crisis, you know. They're in prison, and they're 55 years old, and they figured out things aren't working so well, and they need something, and they kind of stumble on the class. And then you see these guys and gals become just really serious practitioners. I mean, they've got it figured out pretty well. Some will actually do infractions that'll end up putting them in solitary confinement for 30 days because it's a retreat as far as they're concerned. 30 days of silence, you know. That's serious practitioners. But then their lives are different. Now they're incarcerated and their lives have changed, but they wouldn't have come to it if they hadn't been incarcerated, which is kind of an odd thing too by itself. So you kind of wonder how this works out for some people and how some people run into it and others don't. Those, I think, I don't know, I'm not going to speculate on what moves somebody this direction. It certainly is good to practice this when you're not in crisis mode, because like Renee said, when you are, you're better equipped to handle things. You know, and I think unfortunately, some folks only practice, they try to do this when things are bad. And it really is you want it to be a practice that you can do when things are going well. And you have to kind of force yourself to do that. But then you have that going for you when things do go bad. And it will make a big difference. It'll make a huge difference, you know. When you start thinking about impermanence, you know, even with a crisis, that's impermanent, you know. Crisis is just another name for an opportunity, right? So it just can change everything if you've kind of got some of this practice and you keep working with it. And you realize how much of what's going on around us is just stories in our head, you know. And we can stop the stories or change the stories or replay them like we did with the water one. You know, so we can create new stories that give us richness and give us happiness. I mean, that's the whole goal of this, is to create happiness. And it's not the, you know, the hedonistic kind of, you know, oh boy, this is fun kind of happiness. But it's a deep, what's the term? Hedonism or something? It's a deep, fulfilling, satisfying, you know, a sense of joy, you know. And when Buddhism, they talk about life as suffering, you know, which doesn't sound real good. But really, what, you know, if it's translated the way it's translated, it means like life is dissatisfying. You know, we'll not find anything in this state of mind that will satisfy us. Even though I've got 7 food lines near me and all of this other stuff, you know, and this and that and everything else. Even though I've got crystal clear special kind of water, it's still not good enough. There's a better one out there somewhere that I'm hunting for. And so we're always looking for the next thing that's going to supposedly make us happy. And the point of this is realizing that that's all an internal thermostat, an internal mindset that we can control. And once we've learned to control it and manage it, then we can change all that rest of the stuff that takes place, you know. Well, you can be happy drinking muddy water if that's where you're at. Any water is good, you know. Everything is good. And moment to moment, you just begin to realize that everything that happens is just kind of new and good. And if it's not, it's going to go away, you know. And the new and the good's going to go away too. You know, it's all just going to kind of keep moving and just keep going away. And we're all just as impermanent as that stuff around us. But we don't think that way. You know, we live in this make-believe world of, you know, I'm permanent, everything I have is mine, this is my stuff, you know, mine. And I want to keep it mine, and I want more, you know, of whatever it might be. And it's not gonna scratch that itch that we have, that satisfaction that we need. So we practice this to kind of develop this deeper sense of things that really are important to us, like gratitude and forgiveness and humility is a good one to have, and courage. And there's a bunch of stuff there that are good virtues that, you know, our grandparents told us were important, but we didn't listen to them, right? They drove a grandparent car. What do they know about good stuff? But it's all there, you know. We just have to kind of scratch away, sand the wood, polish the mirror, whatever it is, and just uncover it. And it's a slow process that takes time, you know. It takes time and effort. But then you realize that that's the thing that you're out there looking for, you know. And that's a big aha moment when all of the stuff we're seeking is really right here on my pillow. You know, I just have to kind of sit and uncover it. You know, work with that for a while. And then carry that out with me. You know. All right. Blah, 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 blah. Anybody else have something they want to add or say? The analytical meditations are good. You know, this Kathleen McDonald's little How to Meditate book, she's got some good ones. I was gonna do another one. We're going to be out of time here to do too much more. But, you know, I did the one with the water. There's one on just appreciating a human life. You know, when you stop and think, if you take time to stop and think that, you know, here I am in this body in North Raleigh. I live in North Raleigh or wherever. We're in Raleigh. And, you know, I think, you know, you think about, what if I'd been born an animal? And some of us, you know, our religious beliefs are such that's not conceivable. But I look at my dog or my cat and I think, well, there's something in there. You know, what made that thing in there, and this thing in here? And how come I'm not in there, you know? And you start thinking about what it would be like to live your life like an animal, waiting to be eaten, or my daughter's got a bulldog. That's a miserable existence. You know, it's a great dog, but you know, he looks miserable all the time. You know, drooling, can't scratch things, all this kind of stuff, looking up, stick your face in a plate of food, you know. But he's got a good life as a bulldog, mind you, but you know, still think, wow, what stuck Stella in there. And then you start thinking about other people. You know, we did the thing with the water, but think about other people living in a country where, look at all the wars going on right now. I mean, we live in a world where I don't worry about going to the cafe and getting blown up too much, you know. That stuff doesn't cross my mind. I don't worry about a bomb dropping on us here, you know, or different things happening. I don't even worry about politically, you know, being oppressed to the point where I can't practice this. You know, there's countries where that occurs too. You know, so we've got all of this stuff that other sentient beings don't have, but we don't fully appreciate that and live with that. So those kind of meditations can bring some real richness to just, you know, what you do on a daily basis. There's meditations in here on death, and I know we talked about that a little bit. It's kind of something that, I don't say it's taboo, I guess it is to some degree in our society. We don't like to talk about death. It's like, ooh, I don't want to talk about that. But that's, what kind of fantasy is that? You know, I don't want to talk about it. We all, you know, everyone in here is going to be gone in 100 years. You know, and there's a whole series of death is certain. The time of death is uncertain. Every day I'm getting closer and closer to it. You know, there's a whole lot of things that we can think about and kind of drill down on, as uncomfortable as it may be. That's reality. And when we live with that reality and accept that reality, then this stuff gets a whole lot better, you know. And I've seen people that, you know, they know they're going to, they've got something terminal, they're going to die. You've all seen people like that. And if they can get past the depression that often goes along with that, or may go along with that, there, everything is rich now, right? There's a certain, every moment's precious. And why don't we live like that normally? You know, because we think, oh, death is something, you know, that's, who knows? That's not going to happen to me. We know, but we don't know. So anyway, if you go through these meditations and kind of drill in on that, it really can change some, it's changed some stuff for you. Suffering, dealing with negative energy. There's a lot of good analytical meditations, and it doesn't look anything like this book. This is like one of the first editions, I think. It's a big greener book out there now. But Kathleen McDonald, and there's other meditations you can get, guided meditations. And what you do is you read through them, you know, so you kind of get the picture in your head, and then you can just, you don't have to sit and read it necessarily. Or you can do that too. I mean, there's a lot of things that I'll read, and I'll read a couple of lines, and I'll just kind of try to hold what that's trying to capture in my head and kind of build up that neurological muscle that allows us to, you know, to begin finding joy in things around us. So that's my story, and I'm sticking to it. Any other thoughts? Comments or questions? Yes, sir.
I'm confused.
Confused. Uh-oh. I hope I didn't confuse you. Perhaps. Yeah. Oh, microphone. Could you hand him that one?
So the confusion is around, the preconceived notion was that it's about letting go.
Okay.
But we talk about analytical, for example.
Right.
Analytical meditation, where it's not about letting go, it's about actually analyzing stuff.
Right.
So it doesn't... I'm confused.
Okay.
I get the point on the analytical side. I get it. But I'm confused how that's going to contribute to the letting go.
Okay. Good question. So how does the letting go and then the analytical meditation kind of work together? So the idea is that when we recognize that we can control our thoughts and emotions, then we get to choose. And we want to be able to let go of the negative ones that don't serve us well and cultivate the positive ones that do serve us well. So In letting go, you know, all of the most of the thoughts that come up in our mind, I don't say are fantasy, but you know, a lot of them are stories, negative stories, perhaps, that we kind of conjure up. Those we want to be able to diminish and let go of the things that are unwholesome and unhealthy. And then try to increase our capacity for things like compassion and gratitude. Neurologically, you know, most of the negative stuff is coming out of a kind of a lower brain thought process. And we're trying to cultivate higher mental processing, which would include compassion. you don't want to do meditations on negative. I mean, you don't want to do focused meditation on negative kind of things, right? People that do, I'm sure. But you meditate on anger. You do that now, right? Without even calling it meditation. You do that. Meditate on anger on your car. You meditate on anger. Whenever it arises, we just play that story over and over and over and over again. And it gets bigger and bigger and bigger and more destructive. So the idea is we can stop that, bring in compassion, and sit with that for a while and build that up. And you'll start to, I think I mentioned about a guy who was really angry, and I pictured him like an animal with his leg caught in a trap, that I said a couple weeks ago. You begin to see people that have these negative afflictions and emotions, and what might have angered you or upset you before, you begin to develop actually a sense of compassion for that person, realizing that they don't know how their mind is controlling them. They're afflicted. They're diseased, right? And you can almost, you can build compassion for people that are angry and negative. Just because you realize, wow, it's got to be a whole lot worse on the inside for them than what I'm seeing on the outside, you know? So that's where the analytical piece comes in. The analyticals are all to build compassion, a sense of compassion and good things. Does that help? Okay. Yeah. Other comments? One last meditation. We'll just do a little bit of this before we go for the evening. So this is one of your handouts too. Purification with light. And it's one that we've actually been doing for the most part anyway. So what we're going to do is when we inhale, we're going to picture all, you know, the white, the good stuff coming in, the purity coming in, traveling around our body, and then exhale negativities. And we're just going to do that for a few minutes, okay? And there's some variations on this. We may talk about it next week. I may talk about it now, actually. Where you can take in other people's suffering, so you take in their black stuff and you destroy it, and you exhale positive stuff for them too. It's called Tonglen, giving and taking. But we're gonna do the opposite of that. We're gonna take in good stuff and get rid of negativities. Okay. So get comfortable. Get your bottom half of your body in the correct position. Feet, butt, back. Shoulders, hands, top of your head up, chin down, tongue and eyes. And take a few breaths in and out. And then as you exhale, again, imagine all the negative energy, mistakes that you've made, distorted conceptions, anger, disturbed emotions, they all leave your body with your breath and send it out into space where it disappears completely. And then as you inhale, imagine all the positive energy in the universe entering your body in the form of pure, radiant, white light. And see it going into your lungs and moving around in your body. And try to keep that pure going in and negativities going out for a few minutes. as we bring it to a close, take a moment to dedicate to all, to whoever you want to, actually. Sometimes it's good to think about everyone who doesn't know about this. And again, think about you're having the opportunity, having the ability, the physical and mental ability, having the location, having the free time, transportation, whatever you can think of that you've got that's given you the freedom to come practice meditation. And maybe dedicate it to all the people out there that don't have that opportunity. Any closing thoughts? See y'all next week. Thank you. Thank you all for coming. And those, again, handouts are available online. I'm guessing everybody's getting to them.